This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon. It's 4:06 and we meet again, Mike.
Yes, we are here. That's good. That's a good sign, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're both here?
You brought Aunt Gladys in with you.
Yeah, Aunt Gladys is out in the hallway right now waiting for me. I don't know what she's selling today, but I'm not buying.
I got to be quiet.
I know. Hey, well, thank you for listening today. Hopefully you'll enjoy the show. And if you have questions, no matter what I'm talking about, don't hesitate to interrupt and say, hey, I got a question. 673-4464. 673-4464. And if you miss this show live, you can always go to 541radio.com. And, you know, this is supposed to be an educational show. Hopefully I'm imparting some knowledge and wisdom to the landscapers out there and the folks who have yards and gardens that want you to be successful. And that's the main purpose of the show.
That's the name of the game.
Yeah, give you some ideas and hopefully make your gardening experience easier and more profitable in that you have more flowers than your next door neighbor and you can brag and go, I listen to the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. That's why my flowers are better.
Yeah, you might even like it.
Yeah. But this is kind of a two-part show okay. In that last week I talked about a couple of men who greatly influenced my life and my career as far as you know, the forestry and landscaping and those kinds of things. But I didn't have enough time to put the third guy on the stake here. And so there's one more man out there that taught me some lessons that I'll never forget and helped me launch into a direction that I knew little about. And I know everybody thinks I know everything, but I don't. Yeah, I know. You know, I don't understand it. I thought I knew everything. Well, when I was 25, I knew everything.
Yeah. You and me both.
Yeah, I was a genius back in those days. But I was in business for about one year or so, when someone told me about some Japanese maples. And, you know, I was aware of a couple of types, but, you know, that was it. That's a Japanese maple, that little red, weepy-looking thing. And, you know, but that was probably my sum total. I knew very little about Japanese maples. And then when I was working and getting my business going, I heard of a man that grew literally hundreds of different varieties of Japanese maples right here in Douglas County. Mm. Yeah, in fact, this man was so good, he wrote a book about Japanese maples.
Wow.
And it's quite an extensive book. If you ever buy this book, it's called Japanese Maples by J.D. Vertrees. There's so much information here, it'd take you years to study all this and to
there's lots of pictures.
Oh yeah, there's color photos on every page of the different types.
Yeah.
Where
can you get a book like that?
Well, when we used to have bookstores here,
right?
Yeah. we could get them. But you probably go on Amazon and Amazon booksellers
or whatever,
or go to Barnes and Noble in Eugene. They might have some. You know, a real place with a real bookstore like they used to be.
Right. With shelves.
With shelves and stuff that you could actually see the books. Yeah. One of those. Yeah. Oh, gosh. But this man's name was J.D. Vertrees, and he lived out in Garden Valley, not far from the country club out on the North Umpqua, at a really nice place. Anyway, I heard a couple of people talk about him and what he did, and I was very interested in seeing his Japanese maple outfit and garden and his growing conditions, etc. So I called to make an appointment to see his maples, and he said, come on out and take the tour of the place. I said, yeah, that's great. So what I saw when I got there was way beyond my imagination. I mean, he had a forest of Japanese maples growing on his property. Jeez. And when I say a forest, some of these trees were 40 and 50 feet tall. And then, wow. Of course, there was the dwarfs, the miniatures, and the in-betweens. Like, they're anywhere from a true dwarf Japanese maple, about maybe a foot tall at maturity, and very, very slow growing with very small leaves. And you look at that, and that's a tree? Yeah, that's a tree. Okay. His trees were at least 40, some of them that he had planted over the years. And, of course, right along the banks of the North Umpqua, it was nice soil, and, he had plenty of water and that kind of thing. This boggled my mind. I thought, well, geez, Louise, how can all these be Japanese maples, you know? Mm-hmm. But I got out and we shook hands and he talked a little bit and we started touring his plantation. I think he had about maybe 2 acres on the river there. And, and my knowledge of maples, Japanese maples at that point in my life was really minimal. Mm-hmm. I say, I only knew 2 or 3 types, I think. And I knew about them, but I just had not seen all the different varieties that there are. But J.D.'s forest, like I said, had maples that were true dwarfs that were like a foot tall, as well as the 40-foot tall monster maples. And then I was amazed and realized how little I really knew about Japanese maples. And as you see, Dale, I brought his book here. It's 300 and something pages of photos of Japanese maples, the different types.
There's got to be a lot of information.
There's at least a couple hundred words in description of each variety and, the different leaf shapes and sizes and ultimate growth habits and what they turn into. And I don't know at the time, he might have had one of each variety. Maybe not, but he grew these wholesale. He grafted and grew them. And he gave me the tour and showed me at least several hundred varieties. And I thought, geez Louise. And of course he told me all the Japanese names as well as their Latin names. So I didn't understand most of what he was talking about, because the Japanese names were foreign and hard for me to remember and pronounce, for the most part. I can do a lot better job nowadays than I've been at it.
Something like Sumasaki.
Sumasaki Angelanda or whatever. And then the Latin names, of course, they're all Latin. And, it's like Acer Palmatum and those kinds of things.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, to somebody who has not been around this kind of thing. But this was way too much for me at that point in time. Like, cause I was just starting out. I'd only been in business a year.
Yeah.
And I knew a lot of plants and a lot of trees at the time. And I was learning more. And, of course, that was way back in 1973, that's when I started.
Oh, it didn't seem that far long ago.
Yeah, that's just right. yesterday, day before.
It does. Oh, yeah.
But walking around his place was like getting a master's degree in about 2 hours.
Wow.
That's how the information, he just, normal, this is
something
this
you
and
couldn't
this is
pick.
This. No, you'd have to go to college for 3 years to find out what the heck he was talking about.
If that.
Yeah. And so as I was so impressed. I mean, he had seedlings, he had thousands of seedlings that he had grafted and was growing, then they were already pre-sold, and I asked if I could buy some, and he replied to me that he didn't sell any trees locally. And I went, kind of tilt. He doesn't sell any trees locally. He said he only sold to other countries and across the United States, but not to anyone in Douglas County. And I didn't question him about it. I just found it kind of odd. Here he had all this stuff out there. But, he was a very particular as to who got his maples and who bought them and who raised them and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I was a bit put off by his attitude at that moment. I thought, you know, here I'm a new guy just getting into the business, and I didn't have a whole lot of money, so I just maybe wanted to buy two or three or maybe five.
Something to get started.
Yeah, just to have some. And how cool are these trees, you know? And that was my, you know, like a kid at a candy store at Christmas, you know. Wow, look at those, aren't they neat?
But you can't have any.
I'm sorry, I don't sell locally. You know, and then as we progressed through the rest of the tour, I spotted four maples that were off to the side all by themselves, just four of them, and they were in gallon sized pots, and they were absolutely beautiful. They had multicolored leaves. There was a light green, a dark green, and pink polka dots all the way through the leaves.
Wow.
Yeah. And the name, the common name is called Eskimo Sunset. And I can't remember right off the bat what the Latin name is. It was Ace or something or whatever.
Yeah.
But I thought, man. And then I asked, can I buy just one of those for my own yard? definitely not was the answer.
That's right to the point.
Yeah, that's right to the point. And at that point, my admiration for the man and his maples dropped to a minus 10 degrees, you know. I thought, geez Louise. So I promptly left with a bad taste of him, and I never went back.
Oh.
No, but the rest of the story.
Should we take a phone call first?
We got a phone call? Sure, you betcha.
All right. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hi. I was outside pruning my Moyer plum, and right at the, I guess you would call it, where all the branches come together, the base, it's rotting in there. What can I do to... I mean, eventually it'll just rot away and fall apart, I would imagine.
It's well, at what height did you find the rot? Was it like 6 feet in the air or lowered to the ground or what?
About 5 feet to the air.
About 5 feet. Now, what size was the branch that you found this in?
It's at the crux where there's four main branches that come together.
I see. Well, there's a couple of ways that you might be able to save it. One, the quickest way is to cut that rot out of there. In other words, cut that limb totally off so that the rot cannot penetrate down into the rest of the tree. The other thing is to dig out the rot with a screwdriver or a spoon or, you know, get down to good wood again. And you can, there are fungicides that you could soak it with to hopefully stop the rot. You may, if you've created a hole, if you filled it with a tree seal, which is like a tar material that you can get.
I have that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could fill the hole with a tree seal, or just if the hole was too big where the rot was, maybe put a piece of good wood over the top or maybe a shape it so it fits in the hole and then put the tree seal on it. That would probably slow it down, if not stop it.
It's pretty deep, so I was wondering, you know, there's a lot of like phony wood that you use in construction. I was wondering if something like that would even work. Seal it first with the tree sealer.
It may. What happens is when it's probably a flat surface, so when it rains, the water and the moisture get down into the hole, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what's continuing the rot. If there's if you can seal the hole off, the tree, if it's still alive, which I assume that it is.
It is, and it's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, and you could, if you seal the hole off, so rain can't get down in it, it will begin to heal itself. It'll take a long time, but it can heal itself.
Okie doke. I'll work on that.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Well, we'll be back with the rest of the story.
Yeah, one of these days.
Yeah, a couple of minutes. On the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, it's 4:23 now. Let's
okay, and the rest of the story. I was talking about Mr. J.D. Vertrees and how disappointed I was in his
attitude
of not to sell me one Japanese maple when he only had 10,000 of them at his place. And so, like I said, I promptly left after that part of the visit, and I had a bad taste, and I never went back. So. Now, we fast forward 10 years, and by this time, I owned my own nursery out in Dillard, Winston Dillard, and a friend of mine who was in the nursery business had called me. He had a nursery out toward Elkton, and he says, Mike, I'm getting out of the nursery business, and I got a bunch of nursery material here, Japanese maples and other grafted materials. Would you be interested in buying it? So I went out there and took a look, and I went, wow, man, there's a lot of stuff out here. Good-looking stuff, too. Good. And so we made a deal, and I bought all of his stock, all of his nursery stock. Took me 3 or 4 trips to, you know, get it back to my place and everything. Wow. But in that mix was about 600 Japanese maples.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and they were like in 3-gallon cans, which is a pretty good size can. So yeah. They weren't little tiny ones. They were nice looking.
Mm-hmm.
So I was taking care of them, and it was spring, and they were growing, and they were beautiful. And, you know, they just look good. And I was so proud of them. 600 of these dudes, you know, it was amazing. So one day, as I was working the nursery, I saw an older couple looking at my maples, and I approached and asked if I could help them. And the gentleman told me that my display of maples was outstanding and very impressive.
Oh.
And I thought, whoa, that's nice. Thank you for the compliment. Then he introduced himself as J.D. Vertrees. I laughed, and I told him, I says, you know, I met you about 10 years ago at your nursery. And then he kind of remembered. And I says, and then I shared with him the story of that meeting about him refusing to sell me any maples and how angry I was when I left. And we both had a good laugh over it.
Uh-huh.
We both had a good laugh. And the result, as a result, we became good friends. And he then became my mentor. And I worked with him for a while. And he taught me how to graft maples and proceeded to give me another education over the next 10 years until he passed away.
Mm.
And he was actually a brilliant man. He was a pretty straightforward dude. I like straightforward people. You know, if you don't like me, say, tell me, I'll get the heck out of your sight.
Yeah,
you know,
that's no, you no beating around the bush.
No Japanese maples, I'm out of here. But he was a very brilliant man, and he at that time he presented me with an autographed book.
Oh,
this
cool.
One that I brought here on Japanese maples, and he gave me a maple tree.
Oh, did he?
Yes, he gave me one of those that I really liked of the four, the Eskimo sunsets, and he gave me one, and it was the very tree that I tried to buy 10 years earlier.
Mm.
So all I could say was, it was great. It was a really, really nice relationship that I had with him.
Mm-hmm.
I learned so much from that man. He was, like I say, he was brilliant. He knew his Japanese maples. But he still only did not sell locally.
Yeah.
And the tree that he gave me was, you know, about a 3-footer, so it was not a baby. And it was nice. And I took that home and planted it in my yard, and now it's growing quite well. And it's very, very different. And like I said, and I don't know if I said it on the air or not, but it's the leaves are a large leaf, like our regular maples around here. They're not quite that large, but larger than what people would think a Japanese maple leaf would be.
Yeah.
And it has kind of a dark green edge coloring. Mm. And then in more into the center part is a light pale green color, and then when the new growth comes out, there are pink spots all through the leaf. Mm. So it has 3 different colors in the leaf, And you just don't see many of those around. I've got some at the nursery that I sell. Mm-hmm. They're $28,000 a piece, but I don't sell locally. No, but that's that.
Careful, somebody's going to steal it.
Well, yeah, that's happened before. But
yeah, somebody thought they got a real bargain.
Okay, stop it now. And as I mentioned earlier, JD wrote a book of Japanese maples, and this book. I brought it in here to the studio to show my colleague, has over 300 pages. It's over 300 pages in length with color photos and description of over 1,800 wow. Japanese maple types in this book.
Wow. Yes.
It's an amazing book
yeah.
Of all that is available out there. And like I said, there were 1,880 Japanese maples with photos that I counted. I didn't count each individual one. I went to the index and I counted how many were in the index and multiplied it by 10 or whatever it was.
Took the easy way.
Yeah, I took the easy way out. It was easy. But you know, these are very unique trees, and they come in many sizes, many colors, different growth habits. Some grow straight up like oak trees or regular maple trees. Some are weeping. Some a lot of them grow to 6 feet and quit. That's it. They quit growing tall, but they get wider.
Wide.
Yeah, and they spread. All of them have outstanding coloration of the leaves and shapes of the leaves. Some are the leaves are very thin, you know, hardly maybe a quarter inch wide, and they'll have, I showed you a couple of them that had white. No, here's one.
Half and half.
Half the leaf is white and half the leaf is green.
Green.
And it's split right down the middle.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, right.
Wow.
And that's why, and here's another, is green in the middle with white serrated and pink edges to it.
Wow.
And you know, these are actual photos that JD took on his property and other places. He traveled the world, and one time he was in Boskoff, Holland at a city park in Boskoff, Holland, and he got some scion wood to bring back to the United States to graft and see if they'd take. And for the life of me right now, I can't remember the tree's name. But he gave me one of those as well. And the mother tree, if you will, that was in this city park in Holland, actually the mother of that tree came from China. And
oh, really?
It was grafted from China and brought to Holland and then brought to the United States. So, you know, trees are world travelers.
Yeah.
You know? They get around.
Yeah.
Whether we don't want,
they
we
just don't
want them
stand
or not.
In the ground.
No, they just don't stand there, you know. But the book is really good. And if you're interested in those types of exotic trees, Japanese maples are... They're tougher than nails. They're really good, and like I say, they go anywhere from 1 foot to 40 feet easily. And I'm sure there are some that are taller than 40 feet. And the leaf size or in the coloration and the distinct shape and edging, they're just very unique, and they're wonderful to use in any landscape project. Like if you want a nice tree for your entryway, something special to look at in the backyard, in a garden type situation where you have some exotic type plants, you don't just kind of jam them in somewhere and let them grow. They're a special tree. They're you know, a lot of people like pink dogwoods and white dogwoods are a very special tree, so they give them a special spot in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing you want to do with a Japanese maple. And like I say, when people think of leaves, they think, oh, usually green and shades of green. Nah, not with Japanese maples.
Yeah,
white,
I was amazed
white,
how
white,
many there were.
White leaves, pink, red, burgundy, green, and combinations of
orange.
Orange, exactly. All on the same leaf. And you go, is that a real tree? Yeah, it's a real tree. And then when the fall colors come, they go into the fall dormancy, and then their colors are just magnificent. They just brighten up the place.
Oh,
and
they change colors?
Oh, yeah, they change colors.
Wow.
Now, unlike public perception, Japanese maples are not some tender little tree that needs constant care and protection. They're tough. And years ago, I planted many of them, different types on my own property out in the boondocks there, just to test their toughness. I'm like, okay, let's see how tough this is. Because when people ask me, well, will this grow here or will that grow there? Or, you know, yeah, I can say from experience, yeah, I have several, you know, I think I got about 20 different varieties around my place right now. And some of them are up in the timber with the Doug fir, and some of them are, you know, along the creek. And it just depends. You know, like I say, they're all very, very colorful. Mm-hmm. And some I planted in the sun, some kind of in the shade, just to see what the difference would be in their growth habit and that kind of thing. And I used mostly my native soil, which is kind of a forest soil. And maybe if the ground was too rough, I'd put in a few amendments, like maybe some peat moss or some bark mulch, you know, just kind of lighten up the soil away. And the first year, you know, I watered like once a week at the most, and then much less water after the first year because they just don't need it. It's now I seldom ever give them water, ever. Younger ones, I might, you know, I feel sorry for them in July and August. You know, it's been a 89 degrees and 99 degrees for a week and a half. Yeah. Give them a drink. Yeah, you know,
it's, they're thirsty.
Yeah, you know, thirsty. And maybe they'll do it, but not very often because I got to usually carry the water in 5-gallon buckets from the creek, so I don't have hoses up in places where I planted these stinking trees, man. What I plant them so far away from water for? I don't know. Yeah. But all are doing well. No bug damage, and occasionally a deer might eat a few leaves, but they don't totally devour them. And so, like I say, when I talk to a client about how to plant or care for a Japanese maple, I can speak from experience.
Yeah.
And because, if you do this, this will happen. And I've said this 100 times before, and I find that like most problems come from overwatering. Mm-hmm. People say, "Oh, that beautiful exotic tree," and they take it home and they plant it and they start to water it, and then they get out there and they water it and they water it and they water it.
What's wrong with it?
Yeah, what's wrong with this? I'm paying a lot of money for this little tree, and now it's dying. So, you know, if we plant Japanese maples in one of our landscaping jobs, we always make sure there's excellent drainage. Another way, and we like to mound them up so that there's no puddles of water around the base or around the trunk, and the water, the water can't sit in the root zone and rot the roots.
Saturate.
Yeah, and this is the way to determine if overwater is a problem and it's taking place in your yard. Just watch the leaves. If the leaves on the edges, just the outside edges of the leaves, kind of get brown and crispy, you know, and like they're, you know, you look at them, and the uneducated person will say, oh my gosh, it needs water.
Yeah.
That's just the opposite of what it needs. It needs to dry out, because what happens with, especially with the Japanese maples and some other varieties, but the maples that I'm speaking about, is that when you get so much water in there, it excludes the oxygen and it rots the roots. And if the roots are rotted, see, the hair roots are the very first roots that come out, and they're the roots that take the nutrition from the soil and send it up to the tree and make it grow and have leaves and all that. Well, if there's too much water in it, they rot off. And they call them hair roots because they're as big as your hair. They're just the primary roots are out there seeking, new ground, exactly, to get going. Yeah. Well, you rot them off, that stops the growth, because the bigger roots are not designed to take up the nutrition to the rest of the tree. And that's how you tell if the leaves are crispy. First thing you do, stick your finger in there. Is the soil wet? If it's wet, hey, you are overwatering. And here's where they're really cool. They're so tough that if you quit watering and let them dry out, I mean, those other leaves that are already crinkly and brown, they're going to get totally brown and fall off. Mm-hmm. But what's going to happen is they'll sprout new leaves. They'll push a brand new crop of leaves as soon as the root system regenerates enough to bring the nutrition from the soil and pass it up through the tree.
Start over again.
Yeah, it's starting over again. So, like, if you got a crew cut tomorrow, your hair's not dead. Just don't overwater it. But it grows after a while. It comes back. And any plant, I don't care what it is, well, maybe not any plant, but most plants, if they have brown, crispy edges in summertime and you're watering more than once every 7 to 10 days, that's your problem. It's overwater. Quit it. You don't have to do it. And where I find the biggest problem in that is when people have a in-ground sprinkler system, an automatic sprinkler system. You know, there's a they think the more water they suck to it, the better off it's going to be. Nuh-uh, not the case. Because you want, what you want is that root system, as the water level in the soil goes down and drops, you want that root system to follow the water and follow the moisture. They will do that of their own accord. You don't have to teach them how to do that. They just have automatically do that.
Amazing.
Amazing stuff. But the only kind of trees you don't have to you can't overwater are probably poplar, willows, alders. You know, those are natural things that you see growing on creek banks here in Douglas County or all over Oregon. Aspen, you know, that kind of stuff. They love water. They can grow in, you know, I got ponds out at my place where all I can see is the top of the willows right now. But as the water drops through the year, then there's the whole tree.
There
it is. Do we have a break?
We do.
You look like you're warmed up to hit the button.
Yes, here we go. That was fun. All right. Couple more minutes and we'll be right back with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show right here. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, more Japanese maple stories from Mike.
Yeah, and I've been talking about my good friend J.D. Vertrees and how much he has taught me and the experiments I've done with Japanese maples over the years, and found them to be a very, very tough tree. And I know I repeat myself a lot, but don't overwater the poor things. They don't need it. They don't like it. They don't desire it. They're not a willow tree. they're not something that's growing on the side of a creek, usually. So just remember, if you quit watering, they'll recover, sprout new leaves. But if you continue to water, the tree will die. You can always add to water. You can tell when they're wilted. If we have a real hot couple of weeks or something like that, the leaves are not going to be horizontal. They're going to be kind of droopy, and you can tell. And at that point in time, you give them a good drink of water, a couple of gallons around the base of the tree, and within hours they recover. But you don't have to do it every day. It's just keep your eye on it and learn what your soil is capable of doing as far as keeping the moisture level in the growing area. Or does it drain very quickly through? Or is it pure clay? We've got most of Douglas County's solid clay. And that doesn't drain worth beans. That very slow drainage in clay. And that's a blessing and a curse, both, because depends on what you're planting there. But if you mix bark mulch or peat moss or potting soil with clay and mix it together very, very well, you've got a pretty dynamic soil at that point. And it'll be halfway good on the drainage as well. Like I say, you can always add water, but you can't take it out once the damage is done. It has to go through a process by which it dries and gets aerified, if you will, on its own accord. Now, like I said earlier, these trees look fragile, but they're not. I planted one in my nursery display garden. I've got several in there, but I've got this one, and it's I'm not quite sure I recall the name because it was a very long Japanese name, and I'm not really good in remembering Japanese names. but anyway, I planted one. I forget where I got it from. Somebody gave it to me and said, here, try this one, Mike. Okay, I'll try it. I'll stick it in the ground, see what it looks like. And I watched it, and it was spring, and the leaves were kind of a light green. And as the summer progressed, the leaves went from a light green to a darker green. And then in the fall of that year, they turned a really pretty orangish yellow with red streaks in them. And the leaf was a kind of a small leaf, but it looked good. And I was really proud of this tree. And in the spring, however, when the leaves came out, they were all white. The whole tree had white leaves. And I thought, oh, man, it needs fertilizer. I mean, there's something wrong with my ground. I don't know why. I mean, its topsoil is beautiful. Everything else is growing. And I'm trying to figure out what the heck to do. So I thought, well, it looks like it needs fertilizer. So I socked the fertilizer to it. I put a couple of handfuls on it and thought, well, that ought to fix it.
That did it.
That ought to fix it. And so I did it twice. and within a short time, the leaves began to look burnt, like I was describing with the overwatering. And I'm thinking, what did I do? You know, man. And then they begin to fall off. And here it is, like May, and these leaves are falling off, you know, end of April, first part of May, you know, at the height of spring when everything should be looking super duper. Well, I made it look deadly. and it was, oh, gosh. But, you know, then for whatever reason, you know, spring being spring, I got really busy and I didn't go back and check the tree probably for a month. Maybe two, but a month for sure. And at which point I went back to it dawned on me, oh, I wonder if the tree lost all its leaves, if it's dead or what. Mm-hmm. But I went back to check on the tree and it was beautiful. It was fine. It had brand new leaves on it. All the crinkly white ones had disappeared on me, and I thought, geez Louise.
Were they white leaves again?
No, they were, it was like probably mid-May, and they were green, light green.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, boy, this is a strange tree. I got to learn about this guy. But little did I know, but that variety of maple comes out in the spring with white leaves.
Oh, really?
Because I made the mistake of over-fertilizing it the second year when the leaves came out white again. I thought, man, how did I miss it? Well, when this particular tree, and for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it, they're pure white. I mean, white as that sheet of paper.
Jeez.
And it's gorgeous. Right now it's about a 40-foot tree, 35 feet anyway. And it's beautiful. It's got kind of a scaly bark, and you know, it's just an exotic looking thing.
Yeah.
It'll come out sometime, I'll show it to you.
Okay.
And like when it's just leafing out, you come out and take a look at it and then come back in a couple of months and look at it
again.
It's like a whole different tree. And you know, I finally went to JD's book here and I thought, okay, what am I doing wrong? And I found out that's what happens to that particular variety. The leaves are white when it first comes out in the spring. And then I watched it the third year, and yeah, they were white, and I didn't do anything, didn't fertilize it, left it totally alone. And then they turned a little bit kind of pale yellow, and then a little darker yellow, and then kind of orangish, and then he had green in them at the same time. I mean, I thought, what, this is quite a tree. There's multiple colors all over the place. So, it's been fine ever since I quit messing with it. I haven't fertilized it for 10 years, I don't think. Leave me alone. Don't give me any of that stuff, man. And I thought, well, this is the best fertilizer I could find. And in the fall, it's absolutely outrageous. It's really, really pretty. The problem is I haven't grafted any of these. And I've kind of, it's so, I don't have any of this variety for sale. But it's It's a gorgeous tree, and if anybody's ever out there at Wintergreen, you want to see the tree, I'll be glad to show it to you. I don't know if my staff knows which tree I'm talking about, so I'm the only one that does. But at any rate, I corrected my mistake by getting the book out, like I said, and learning about the tree. They just don't need 5 pounds of nitrogen in the spring. I mean, that's all there is to it. It's like me eating a gallon of ice cream and washing it down with a gallon of root beer, you know? It'd make you sick, man, and turn your colors. In the history of Japanese maples, as I was going through, I found out the earliest published book on Japanese maples was in 1695.
Wow.
When was the printing press invented?
I have no clue.
Way back.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's official.
We'll have to ask Kyle.
Kyle would know. Hey, Kyle, if you're listening to the show, call us and tell us. But anyway, that was the earliest published book on the Japanese maples, 1695. Jeez. And it was a major work at the time, and it was extended to 6 volumes. So that's and it was in Japan, by the way. And it was the Japanese culture being what it is, they like to define and lay everything out very meticulously. So they had 6 volumes to this particular book. Now I don't know how large the books were, but yeah. And then in the early 1700s, where now we're really getting up there, many more books were published. Not only on Japanese maples, but on all aspects of gardening. And they were like the first part of the civilized world, if you will, that was actually writing teaching people about landscaping, about trees and shrubs and all that kind of stuff.
So, they were ahead of their time.
Yeah. Do we have a break?
We do.
Okay. Well, I'll be back.
Here we go. You got more stories for us?
I don't know. I might. I'll think of something over the break.
Stay tuned. You'll find out.
Oh, gosh.
News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Can you believe it already? We're into the down home stretch here.
Down home stretch, yes. That means we got 5 minutes and 43 seconds.
You're just about right on there.
I know. I have this internal clock that keeps on ticking.
And ticking,
hopefully.
Yes.
But, I was talking about the published books about Japanese maples, et cetera, way back in the 1600s.
Yeah.
And then in 1898, the Yokohama Nursery Company issued a catalog of Japanese maples for export to the United States. So, 1898, they're sending tree catalogs to nurseries in the United States, and I thought that was interesting. So the nursery business and the tree growing business has been going on for years and years and years.
Many moons,
and which just kind of solidifies what I've said in the past about the ancient hanging gardens of Babylon and mm-hmm. all these other places over the years and civilizations that people have been tuned into landscaping and growing not only food over the centuries, but also in beautifying their home ground. Of course, the kings of the emperors and all that, they had fantastic, fabulous kinds of things.
And somebody to do it for them.
Yeah, right. Maybe 200 of them go out there and cut each individual blade of grass or whatever.
Right.
But, in the human spirit, everybody, I think, has some love for a pretty setting. Mm-hmm. you know, if it's in your backyard or on the rim of Crater Lake, you know, you're looking at, you know, real beauty, and it's healthy. It's good for you. It's soothing. It takes away, you know, if you had a crummy day and people were yelling at you or whatever, and the tires fell off the car, you get home, you got a nice backyard, you get in that backyard and you got a little patio and a water fountain gurgling, and you have your favorite drink or whatever it might be, and with some shade and some coolness and some color, it takes all that stress away.
Straight away, yeah.
Absolutely right on. And that's, I guess that's why I like what I do so much. I mean, I love what I do. It's
it shows.
It's fun. It's creative, and you know, more often than not, after, you know, you go to give the initial bid, you know, somebody calls you, I want a landscape, I don't know what to do. So you go over, you talk to them, you say, what do you want? And they give you their basic ideas, and then you enhance those ideas and kind of try
help
to
help them along.
Yeah, explain, well, this kind of tree or that kind of tree or Japanese maple here or patio, blah, 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 blah. And they say, yeah, go ahead and do the job. They still don't know what it's going to look like. They still don't know what to expect. Yet I got the picture in my head. I know exactly what it
will
not.
You got the concept.
Yeah, I got it right there. Yep. I know what it's going to do. I know the process. And so many times our clients have said, you know, when I give them the invoice and the bill and all that kind of stuff, they say, you know, this is more than I could imagine. I tried to picture what it was going to look like when you started, but this is way beyond what I could have imagined. And they're really, really happy about it. And that's good. When you get customer satisfaction like that, you know, and the crew shares in that.
It's all worthwhile.
Exactly. My crew is very, very good in what they do, and I can trust them, and they have good communication skills with our clients, so if a client changes their mind, blah, 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 and we try to accommodate you as much as we possibly can, because when we step out of that yard, we want you to be totally satisfied and happy and like your yard.
And if you don't, you eventually grows on you.
Right, and in the years, let's see, this is 46 years in business now, I have had two complaints.
Wow, that's a good track record.
Two complaints. One was my fault because I used the wrong kind of grass seed because I thought it would be appropriate, but the person didn't like it.
Had other ideas.
Yeah, had other ideas. And, you know, and he lived on a ranch way the heck out in the boondocks, so it wouldn't have mattered what kind of grass I put in because all the weeds would have blown in a year or two, and it wouldn't have made, you wouldn't have known what kind of grass I put in. But he asked me, and I told him what I put in. He said, then he really got angry, never paid me for the job.
Oh.
To this day, never paid me. And I was, you know, not making any money back in those days.
Oh, geez.
You know, I was like in business a year or so. But anyway, those are some of the stories. I'll get back to the real landscaping next week. Maybe.
Caller, I'm sorry we didn't get to you. We ran out of time.
I'm sorry. Please call back.
Next Wednesday.
Yes.
With the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN. It is 5 o'clock.